Welcome to the Kings Road Podcast. I am your host, Justin Yance, the Aries Justin Yance, and I'm here with my co-host,
CD Scent. What's up?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good, man.
And we are here to change the face of professional wrestling. And what do we got to talk about today? We are talking about 1997, specifically after the Rumble and into the pay-per-view at the Final Four. So let's get into it. So to me, this Raw is the first Raw where Raw started to feel like Raw is war. Like anything could happen. Like if you look at all the Raws in 97 leading up to this, nothing was really exciting. It was just a throwaway show, a bunch of jobber matches. I've got to believe this is probably when Russo starts to come in.
Also, most Raws started with pan to the commentator and then jobber match, insert jobber match, and that's it. This became like, I know a lot of people are tired of this, the whole open up with a promo, but back then it wasn't done much.
It was WCW new. That was new.
Was doing it all the time, but WWE never did it. Like, I mean, they did it here and there, but they rarely ever did the open up with a promo segment where wrestlers just come in and talk shit and then you do a match. This wasn't commonplace yet. You know, in WCW it kind of was, but not here.
Yeah. And it felt fresh. Like just watching all these Raws up to it. When you see that Raw, it was like, what is this? This is exciting. This is different.
Yeah.
And you got Brett who comes out and he pretty much lays out the law of the land, you know. In some ways, you know, he's telling the truth, but the way he's doing it, he's doing it in such a heelish manner.
You know, that's the genius of Bret Hart's eventual heel turn. If you look at all the things he says, if you really like pay attention to what he's saying, everything he says is absolutely true. He never lies. I mean, he never lies.
Well, and in my opinion,
the best villains in movies and everything are the ones where you understand where they're coming from. Not the guys that are, not the James Bond villain. The guy that you can see is like, I understand why he's doing what he's
like
doing.
Like Thanos.
Yeah.
You know? Or Joker.
Magneto.
You
know?
Magneto, exactly. Vince has a saying. He used to tell this to Kurt Angle. He says, tell the people the truth and they'll hate you. It's kind of true. Really is. Like, he understands that. I mean, I don't think he understands it now.
It depends. It depends on what truth is given. For Kurt Angle at the time, yeah, the truth would have got him booed because he was an Olympic gold medalist.
Well, look at Jericho and Shawn Michaels. He's telling the truth. But they're like, oh, we like Shawn better. And he was able to turn that into being a heel. I don't get the Anton Chigurh stuff that he tries to say that that's based off of. I don't see that at all. He doesn't come off as sociopathic to me. But it's a nice story. Anyways, not enough about that. So this show opens up with, Brett coming out and pretty much, you know, telling everybody, you know, how he feels. And then he quits. And this isn't something that they did a lot.
Like, this is also the first time Bret Hart says Vince McMahon screwed him.
Yeah. Which almost sets the stage for Survivor Series.
Of course.
Him getting screwed.
There's a lot of foreshadowing in this segment.
Which is what, you know, the work became the shoot in some ways.
Like, also,
him getting screwed was a thing he would say, and then that became the truth. He did get screwed.
Also, this is one of the first times and this has become a recurring theme up to this point, where people keep mentioning on the back of their mouth that Vince is the owner of WWF. Like, it's mentioned here and there, and people are like, but that's public record. Okay, the internet did not exist the way it does now. People didn't know Vince McMahon was the owner. Like, even during the trial, Like, do you really think kids were watching that shit? No.
No, it's basically, yeah, it was basically on the news.
Yeah.
And it was in the, you know, kind of in the background. You had to be kind of in the know to know that.
Exactly. And yeah.
Yeah. And then the next thing that happens is Gorilla Monsoon comes out, you know, and Austin comes out. And, you know, we get to see the first, like, sign of Austin against authority with Gorilla Monsoon. Well, wait, no, that does that happen? Does that happen before or after? Because they go to the, after he quits, Vince gets up out of the commentary chair and goes backstage, like you said, foreshadowing that he owns the company.
Well, like, here's the biggest foreshadowing of the segment with Brett and Vince. He comes in, he's complaining about this is bullshit, that he's being screwed. Then he goes up to Vince. You're screwing me, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, because he calls it out in the promo.
Look at the two people involved in this segment. Would be, in my opinion, the two best opponents Austin had. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It shows right there. But like in that promo, Brett looks right at Vince and tells him. He basically he's calling him out. He's like, Vince, the owner. And that was never done before. Like, there's a lot of things that are new here.
There's a lot of things that are new in this segment and things that would foreshadow Austin's road coming up.
And then
even how this foreshadows Survivor Series, which we'll get to later on, people don't realize how important Montreal was to what Austin became. People just associate Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and Vince.
Yeah.
But I truly believe that without Montreal, who was going to be the rival to Austin that could match his character at that point, because Shawn wasn't it. That's just a reality. Told you that Shawn and Austin just wasn't made for that kind of rivalry, the WrestleMania 18 tells you that.
You mean 14? You know?
Yeah, 14.
Yeah, 14. Because if you look at that, well, we're jumping ahead again, but in that rivalry, Sean's not giving Austin a lot. In some ways, he's subtly trying to bury
up.
Him. He was trying to bury him. Like the tie, we'll talk about your favorite moment, but it shows it encapsulates Sean trying to take over.
And it encapsulates, more importantly, it points out what a guy is supposed to do when you see somebody try to hijack your segment. Stone Cold ain't gonna let nobody hijack his segment. And that's the bottom line.
Now,
like, you know what what happened to The Rock with Hogan at WrestleMania 18? Would it never happen to Austin? I'm just saying.
No, because Austin was in green. I mean, Rock was still green.
Was in awe of Hogan.
I mean,
yeah, he was in awe of Hogan.
I mean, it amazes me. People are like, well, you know, with Hogan didn't know what he was. No, he didn't. He knew exactly what he's doing.
Of course.
He was planting the seed. He planted the seed the second he walked out on No Way Out. The second he was out there, he was planting the seed. Even the way he did the promo with Rock.
Yeah.
He was doing, even when he was, even in that, the triple threat, the six man. You could see him he's playing babyface, and Rock couldn't see it. And that's why, and Austin knew he was going to do that. That's why
Austin could see it when they did he could see it. Like every time you see a little segment with Austin and Hogan, it's like, you could tell Austin wasn't having that shit, man. No.
He knew what Hogan was going to do. And he did it. And Rock was like, oh, I'm just so happy to be in the, this Rock is very much, he gets into that whole moment thing Whereas I don't think Rock Austin gives a shit about that.
It's not that about Austin the money. Can't
be, Austin's about money.
Yeah, but it's not that Austin couldn't. It's just it wasn't going to be Hope. Because if you remember, the whole reason the whole beef with WCW revolves around Hogan.
Yeah.
So he already hated Hogan by the time he even got to ECW. So well, that wasn't just going to be forgotten. The Rock sees Hogan as the guy he saw growing up.
Yeah, who gave him the bandana or whatever he claims.
Yeah, but Austin was already in the business. He's not a mark.
Whereas also, you saw in that, you saw the Rock documentary they just did. Mm-hmm. And they have Hogan on there, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I wanted to work with Rock or whatever." It's like, no, you didn't. You wanted to sabotage him.
He wanted to work with Austin, but Austin didn't want to work with him.
But if he was going to work with Austin, he was going to try and sabotage him. The same thing he did with Rock, he was going to try and do with Austin.
Yeah, he was going
to. And Austin was going to have him. Does he know? He was watching that program. He saw it. But Austin's a loner. He's not going to tell Rock, hey.
You know who he would have done that for? Like, even though Ric Flair is not that kind of person, but Ric Flair could have done something like that, and Austin would have let it slide.
Yeah.
He was probably the only guy outside of Brett, maybe more because of respect with Brett.
Yeah.
Hogan was never going to be that person.
Maybe
he was the enemy. He was the enemy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, getting back to this Raw after. Yeah, so Gorilla Monsoon comes out and he says, "We've consulted. We're going to have a fatal four-way match. They're going to call it the final four."
So stupid.
Deciding the thing. But what happens right after that? Austin comes right out. Just comes charging right out there, and he starts saying, "You call yourself the Gorilla? I got a bunch of you would come out here hee-hawing like a jackass."
Here's the thing. Okay, like one, you know what I love about Austin? A lot of these segments he comes in with no music. Yeah. Like, as a person that is just mad and just like, "You think you're gonna say that and I'm not coming in? Like, you think you're gonna take my title shot away with no explanation and I'm just gonna stay in the back like some jobber?"
Like what they would do today, they would just take it off, and he would come out there and he'd have to stand sturdy into like Stephanie.
I hated the booking. Why make him win the Rumble the way they made him win the Rumble?
The reason they had to make the because Russo let that thing out. They wanted Brett.
Here's the thing: if you still want to do the same plan, not changing the plan because you think it's too predictable is not a good reason.
But that's what they did.
It's not.
That's why they did it. Stupid.
Okay, if you think about it, every WrestleMania main event up until a certain point, now not so much, but back then, at least for the first 7, 18, 19, the first 20 WrestleManias, 2021 WrestleManias, you pretty much knew the main event by the first 3 weeks of January. You knew the WrestleMania main event. Before even the Rumble, you kind of knew who was going to win, or you had an inkling. Definitely by the end of the Rumble, you knew what the main event was going to be. Yeah. More often than not. And you know what? You should, because it makes sense. You don't want your storylines to not make sense just to be unpredictable.
Which is where the Attitude Era gets out of control, is they just started making that, just changing things to change things.
And then eventually, and that's fine when you have The Rock and Austin. But when you don't have The Rock and Austin to kind of sugarcoat all of that, then you get the current product. You can do that kind of stuff when you have a megastar, because a megastar is like a megastar quarterback.
And that's what we're missing in this and at this era.
You need the guy. Megastar. And unfortunately, Roman is good. He's really, really good. But there's a difference between being really, really good
and being a guy
saying you're the greatest of all time and other people saying you're the greatest of all time.
And somebody who brings new people to the show.
And more importantly, that can put that can cover up holes.
Yeah.
Whether it's plotting holes or just in the overall storytelling of the entire show, that can at least make you forget that this segment before that angle was bad. You know, like everybody talks about how great the Attitude Era was. Isn't that, but it's not because the matches were great. There was a bunch of mid-card crap that sucked.
No, but we have the fondness for the Attitude Era is because of, Austin, Rock, McMahon, dynamic. The matches were not that great.
That dynamic made you forget about the mediocrity around it.
Yeah. I mean, look at this right now. I'm looking at, after that, Austin calls out Gorilla Monsoon. He's still acting heelish though. Like he may be doing some babyface things, but he is acting very heelish. Brett comes out, says he's going to do it. They get into it. They start fighting again. And then at the end of the show, we get Austin and Taker at the end of the show for the 50th fucking time, where it's, it kind of gets, I don't know. That's my problem here. They didn't have enough of a depth of roster to have multiple matches, but they set up the final four between all of them.
I'm gonna be honest though, the roster issue I felt was always a problem, and the Attitude Era till 2000, I felt they were very top heavy.
Yeah, they were very top heavy, and they didn't. Other than if they brought in Angle and Chris Jericho.
Yeah, but see, earlier, that's where I say 2000 is better, because I felt WCW had a better overall roster.
But they don't really bring Jericho into the top till like 2001, 2002. If they had brought him in 2000.
By 2000, he was semi-main eventing several pay-per-views. He wasn't main eventing. But by the 2000s, he's in semi-main event IC title matches constantly.
Yeah.
He's booked in top matches with Triple H
though what they should have done with Jericho, they should have just brought him in and made him the top guy.
I don't think he was ready in 99.
But he should have been only facing top guys. Like, they should have gone right into a rivalry with The Rock. And they don't. It's just they just use that for that one moment, and then they get rid of it.
I'm going to be honest. I didn't think Jericho was ready till 2000.
He wasn't ready, but if you positioned him, he might have warmed up to the spot
more. But I will say this, when he beat Triple H in that episode of Raw, I saw that live. He should have kept the title.
Everyone says he should have kept that title.
He should have kept the title. It always stuck out to me like, this feels special, and they ruined it.
But keeping back, you're right. That was the big problem with the roster, is that there wasn't enough depth, as you said, till really the 2000. But the matches in 97, because you had Brett and you had Shawn, and they were like at the top of their game.
They were top heavy.
So much.
But what I mean by top heavy isn't that they just had big stars. This was WCW, right?
Yeah.
The undercard matches were great, but the main events sucked. WWE was the exact opposite. Their undercard sucked, but the main events were awesome. By 98, the main event and the semi were pretty good. But 97, it literally was just the world title scene and then everything else.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, they didn't really have anything to really, follow through with. But yeah, I feel like this Raw really is a turning point in some ways for how they were thinking. Because like you said, the very beginning of the show, they came out and started with talking. But it wasn't just meaningless talking like they do now. It was the talking
It was a hot shot angle
last night.
Yeah, it was a hot shot angle from the pay-per-view. you know, it wasn't just some guy being mad. This is a great segment for what they would eventually do on every post pay-per-view Raw. You come in, oh my God, I couldn't pay for the pay-per-view. Let me check on Raw the first half hour and see what happened. They were telling you what was happening from the beginning. This wasn't always true. Shit, man, I remember in 96, sometimes you wouldn't even get to mentioning the pay-per-view until like maybe the last 30, 20 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
Back when it was 1 hour.
Anything else to say about the Raw after the Rumble?
You know, I liked that it really showed where their attention was going. That show really set what would happen for the next month or two going forward. Like, you could tell that the Austin and Bret shit wasn't done. Even though they didn't mean to do Bret and Austin at Mania, the fact is that everything the Rumble and what happened after the Rumble made you feel like that was happening.
Well, they planted the seeds for it. I think they definitely were going to have the match either in April. If things went
as planned. It was supposed to be Mania.
No, I know. But if things went as planned and we did, you know, Bret and Shawn, Bret was supposed to beat him. And he's probably going to turn heel. And then he was probably going to feud with Austin as the champion. But Vince got, you know, cold feet and changed it to Sid and Undertaker, which Undertaker, as we will talk about soon, doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of this. He's just like almost a placeholder when he holds the belt.
Here's the thing. Look, and I know people are going to hate this. Whenever I see people talk about Mount Rushmore and they put the Undertaker, I lose respect for you.
Yeah, because he was never a real top guy.
It's not about being a real top guy, because he was a real top guy. It goes beyond that. Mount Rushmore is not for real top guys. It's for the guy. That's it.
But that's what I mean. He was never the guy.
But that's what I mean. He was a guy. But he was a guy, like, you know, like
when he finally gets the title in 97, it just it means nothing. All right, we're jumping.
I can make the argument that Taker's best run was probably early 2000s.
Yeah, I would say so too. Let's all right. So let's talk about now the Raw where Shawn loses his smile. Because they're not much happen. Now, here's the funny thing here. They're booing Shawn. They're chanting for Sid while he is retiring. Hilarious. While he is supposedly retiring. This is the thing that gets lost in translation when they talk about this storyline. It's like, no, they didn't. Fans were sick of him. You can even see, even in April, I can hear them booing Shawn. They wanted him to turn heel, like... He was Cody in some ways.
I don't think that they were booing him because they were tired of him. I think they were booing him because he was talking about like retiring and losing your smile. Look, nobody wants to hear your baby face talking about crying. Nobody wants to see a baby face cry and talk about how I don't love this anymore. Like, nobody wants to hear that shit.
But it was also, I think, New York. Well, no, it was Massachusetts. Lowell, Massachusetts is where they're doing it. But it's still kind of close to the New York area, and it's still kind of smart world.
Sean was never the pick of the North Territory. Like, Shawn was never like super over and the New York tri-state area.
No, you know? but Vince, that was Vince's guy. He did. He
like, who was more over at WrestleMania 10? Shawn gets all the hype, but who was more over in that match?
Razor Ramon was the face.
Yeah, like he was never that guy. And when it came to the New York era, I'm not saying he wasn't a star, but I think New York loved Bret Hart a lot more than they liked Shawn.
Yeah. You know. Now let's, so that happens. Now, Austin doesn't really do anything on this show. Brett and Vader get into it, and you got Austin at the top of the arena threatening to climb over climb over the balcony and fight Brett. And it's, you know, it's a great visual of what, you know, Austin is going to become, because you're starting to see him slowly. He's a heel, but he's more of a heel that, like, I'm going to get into it with you. I'm going to get into it. I'm going to face you type of thing.
Which, to be honest, was a trend that was already starting to be set with the NWO. With the heel that would just whoop people that. The difference being that he did it by himself and not a fucking group.
Yeah. Now let's talk about, so there's really not much to say about Austin on this show. They also make the announcement that they're going to have Sean says he's no longer the champion, that it's going to be a fatal four-way and it's going to be for the championship. That is made on this show. Now let's talk a little bit about the superstars after that, because we have Austin pretty much, you know, cutting an Austin promo.
Yo, he called Sean a bitch.
Talk about it.
He called Sean a bitch, you know, and a quitter, and that Stone Cold is a lot of four-letter words, but a quitter ain't one of them. Which, again, to me, is another tease of what made the fans gravitate towards Austin. Like, there's no denying he was a heel, but he was the kind of heel that, like, if you're a fan, you're watching, like, he's an asshole, but in a fight, I would like that guy to be on my side. Exactly. He seems like a guy that would fight. Like,
he was like Brock Lesnar. It's like Brock Lesnar when he was a heel.
Yeah.
It's not really a heel, you know, or Kane when he was a heel. Like, you still like, oh, he's still cool. You know?
Yeah, he just does things you don't like.
He's just
like,
you still guys
recognize
you like.
He's a badass. Yeah. It's just he's a badass that you don't necessarily like.
It's not like he's the Miz.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, man.
It's a dirty word now. The curse. Miz.
I miss that heel. We get too often right now the cool heel. Or the straight up coward heel, but you never get the aggressive in your face heel anymore.
No, that's because that's all they think is works. They think the heel has to always be. I would argue this with Jim Ross a little bit, you know, because Jim Ross thinks that the heel always has to be cowardly in some way. And I would agree to a degree,
You know, but I think it should be in the degree of like a Ric Flair in the 80s. Or Austin in 97. Like, for example, Austin would talk so much shit to Brett on the screen. And then Brett is like, well, come here and do something about it. And it's like, you lucky I don't do that. And then the second that he gets hit and laid in the floor, he comes out of nowhere from the back, no music, nothing, runs on top of him and just starts pounding on him. That's a heel. You have a cowardly nature to him, but not disgusting coward. You know, like sneaky.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even like Ric Flair, like he would talk so much shit to like a Lex Luger or a Magnum TA. And then
you ain't, like, you can't wear my shoes. You don't have this.
And Magnum TA will say some shit like, I bet you wouldn't do, you wouldn't dare touch me. And Ric Flair slaps him, and then he fucking punches him, and then
that's where
he backs up.
I don't care what anybody says. I've always liked Rock better as a heel, because he just has more of a heelish personality underneath, you know? I mean, he's a nice guy, but
I think he's
better as a heel.
Him and Hogan are, in my opinion, the only two wrestlers I could think of that really played baby face and heel at the very top level.
Like, well, no. With one other person you're missing here.
Who am I?
Terry Funk. Terry Funk could play heel and face. At best, and he could make you hate him.
I can argue that Terry Funk as a face and Terry Funk as a heel was the exact same person, with maybe the exception of the Ric Flair and Terry Funk thing. Like, most of his heel shit, he was basically doing the same thing he was as a face, just to, the difference was his opponent.
Yeah. All right, so let's take a little break here. All right, and we're back. So I want to talk a little bit about a segment on MTV. I'm going to let you lead point on this.
Yeah,
tell me all about this.
This is like the beginning of February 97. There was a show on MTV back then called Idiot Savant. It's just guys like maybe reading poems or it's like the regular pop culture show.
Did he have the Austin 316 shirt on when he was doing this?
No.
Okay. Interesting. Wow. Okay. So yeah.
So this is important because this is actually, to my knowledge, the first instance where you saw Austin on TV outside of wrestling, not promoting like Brett and Austin at Survivor Series.
Like what he
wasn't promoting a match.
Yeah. Like he became with like Celebrity Deathmatch.
Yes.
A lot of people came to know him from that show.
This was the first time that a TV show wanted him for him. This showed you that one, people are starting to notice. And MTV at the time was very, you know,
they
had their hand in the pulse.
They were the counterculture still. Yeah. They were still a counterculture station.
Yeah, they had their hand in the pulse and they knew. They looked at that roster. They did not want Brett. They did not want Shawn. They did not want The Undertaker. They wanted Austin. This would also go in line with, you know, the relationship MTV would have with Austin, because he would come in for the Video Music Award. He'd also, most famously, you know, he was a
celebrity
guest for Celebrity Deathmatch. For
I think a lot of people came to know him from that.
Yeah, the only reason I love Celebrity Deathmatch was because of Austin.
Well, it made it so like, oh, look, Austin's on this show. And then they did the very first Austin McMahon match on Celebrity Deathmatch, where he kills him.
That was like one of the highest rated episodes they ever had.
It was great. And you had actually Vince's voice. And it was cool. It was things like that that made wrestling cool that people forget.
But this is important because... this is important because this is February 97. He was not a main eventer yet. You know, not really. Not in the where you needed to be. This was a first sign where you can see outside of wrestling, people were starting to notice. Austin, you got to remember, you weren't seeing WWF wrestlers outside of wrestling at that point. WCW was everywhere. No one gave a shit about wrestlers from WWF at this point. It was dead. You know, like the show was starting to really pick up, but in the moment, it wasn't there. In school, it was not there yet. It was
WCW. But these are the things that plant the seed for it. Because wrestling was cool outside of wrestling as well. And people don't understand that. I don't think
that's where we're comparing it. We're comparing Austin and where he measured in pop culture at the time. And this is the first time where you can really see that outside of wrestling, people were starting to look at Austin because they weren't looking at WWF at all at this time. If you weren't in the NWO, if you weren't Sting, you weren't being looked at.
Because remember, like the NWO has that famous thing where somebody threw something at Nash and Nash jumped over. Ran over and like tackled the guy. It's about ready to kill him. This is like at a spring break thing, you know. Like, yeah, the NWO
like Seth Rollins.
NWO was like, he tackled the guy and was like about ready to kill him. Like this young kid had the audacity to throw a rock. He threw a rock at Kevin Nash and he hauled ass over the barrier. And he said, "I don't know how I did it. This I have such bad knees, but." That guy was not getting away. So, little things like this are what made wrestling cool in 1998. And as I was saying, the spring break thing, you know, only WCW is really getting the spring break. But now at this point, you start to see MTV taking a liking to WWF. So let's talk a little bit about talk a little bit about what Austin did on this show, because this is so great. I go.
Yeah, so Austin begins a segment, and it reminded me on the old angles he did around 2001 as a heel, where he would say something like, I know that you think I'm a big tough guy, but I want to show you my sensitive side, when he sings to Vince, which I hated. But he comes into the show, to the host, and he's like, you know, I would just want to show my sensitive side, because people think Stone Cold is a big,
I just want to show my sensitive side, you know, be a little bit there.
So he cuts this poem, and I'll say it, you know, it's called The Traveler. I traveled the world the last few years. Sometimes I think of home, and even Stone Cold can't fight the tears. Another car, bus, or plane takes me to a faraway places. What I remember most is all the smiling faces. Short people, tall people, people with glasses. The bottom line is, I whoop all your asses.
Brings a tear to my eye. I drive the world. It's so great. Oh my God, that's hilarious. I just want to say, roses are red, violets are blue. Stone Cold's gonna whoop your ass. What are you gonna do? Like, this is so great that they had him on there. I can already see, like, I haven't even seen this clip, and I can see him doing it exactly like how I know he.
I'll show you it.
It's so great. No, I know I can find it, but it's so funny. It's so good. Such a good segment, and it's little things like that that made wrestling cool in pop culture.
Yeah,
which people don't understand. Wrestling is not cool.
Okay, how are you supposed to explain that to a kid under 20? How?
I don't know.
They cool. As long as they were born, they have never seen wrestling, even remotely in the same light as you would see football, basketball, or baseball. And back then, it was competing with the NFL.
I know. I bet
on Monday. Their day.
I know. I mean,
can't compare.
Kids would actually, you know, I met one guy who's like, yeah, I watched wrestling, was good, 2004. And I was like,
what?
Anyone good? It's bullshit then.
I mean, it was good compared to good, speaking.
But it wasn't great.
Way better than the shit now.
Okay, yeah, that's about it. We could say anything's better than the shit we have now. I say WCW 2000 was better than the shit we had now. So at least we had stars.
I agree.
We had Scott Hogan.
Steiner himself is better than anything on WWE.
I didn't even watch. I didn't even watch. Like, I haven't watched Raw in months or SmackDown.
Unfortunately, I watched Raw yesterday.
You did.
Since it was in New York. My God, that crowd was dead.
Yeah, see, if you can't excite a New York crowd, that's like Chicago, New York, Philly. These places are easy.
It's easy. Pathetic.
And they can't get it. All right. Well, anything else to say about this? We were going to go into Final Four, but we're going to go into Final Four next time. Just run a little long here in the tooth. So stay tuned for the Final Four.
Same Stone Cold time, same Stone Cold channel.
And throws the chair. All right. The truth
shall
set
you
free.